Hi, Dominique, and welcome to another edition of The Week Ahead. How are you doing?
Very well, Andrew. Thank you. You look all summery with the tropical trees
Thank you. And I
smiling
have
in the
my
background.
sleeves rolled up. And let's kind of dive into this past week. So just again, as time stamping, it's kind of Friday, UK afternoon. And I think we've discussed, and just for our listeners, you know, we this week I would say is probably the pretty high level of, especially kind of more of our kind of equity and credit clients, really kind of asking us questions about how strong is the U.S. consumer, and you know. What do we think about all these rate cuts that are now priced in? And obviously the, you know, price action often leads a narrative. But I think like one of the things that people are referencing is, you know, the Walmart CEO talking about how he sees the looks like the U.S. consumers may be more starting to struggle. So maybe we'll kind of start there. You know, what's your take on everything, updated view for everyone? And also any kind of views on the price action and kind of the building narrative.
So, sure, Walmart is a bigger distributor, retailer in the US, but Amazon must not be far behind. It seems to me that Amazon is complaining much less than Walmart. And in general, of course, you know, we all work in the market, so the S&P is our universe, but the S&P is not the US economy. To give you an example, 92% of new hires are done by firms with less than 500 employees. The S&P average is about of employment is about 50,000. I mean, it's biased by Amazon and Walmart that have more than 1.5 million employees, but still. And if you know, if you look at the data, and I have tons of data,
Right.
of course, the US consumer, some US consumers are being stressed out by higher rates. But you know, at the same time, you also have good news. Like there was an article in Bloomberg about record number of Americans own homes debt-free. My approach is to be very data driven. At the
Right.
same time, I live in Los Angeles. It's the second biggest city in America. I go out, I look around, I look for changes in things like signs of job, I mean, of shops looking for employees. Like whenever I go to my local Kroger, it's a big grocery store, I still see the little sign saying, "Why don't you stop by and give your resume? You could start next week." I also look
Yep.
for people in the shop. So I am 100% driven to being, I mean,
Open.
100% open to being wrong, but I have to stick to my framework. I have to stick to the data, and I'll try to complement the data with casual observation, because of my experiences being a young economist at the IMF, going to countries, writing a beautiful report with fantastic spreadsheets, and then realizing once you got back to Washington that everything was wrong, and because we didn't spend enough time going to the market and talking to people on the ground. So I think maintaining this balance is important between data and first-hand observation. And honestly, I'm not seeing a collapse of the
Right,
US of
right.
US
I mean, like we've said,
slowdown.
you know, we've gotten questions like this four or five kind of, you know, it ebbs and flows, but four or five times, you know, over the last kind of 18 months. But also, I mean, there's no question, rates are much higher now, and they've been high for a long time. There is a chance, but yeah, sorry, you're gonna say.
I was going to say, to be fair to the what I call the recessionistas, they can call me expansionista if they like to. But to the recession crowd, to be fair to them, I think this time around they have more of a data-driven reason to be worried, which is the increase in unemployment and the fact that in the past, whenever you've had unemployment rising above a certain threshold, typically you were in recession. That's the Sam's rule. I like that rule a lot because it captures non-linearities in the economy, feedback between consumption and production. But this time around, I think there are special reasons why the threshold unemployment is more like a 1 percentage point increase than 50 basis point. This is what I wrote in my weekly.
Right.
So fears are recession fears are acknowledged by me, but I don't think they are valid this time around either.
Right. Okay. Interesting. I guess anything about the market reaction, anything else about this past week, any Fed speeches and
So, in a way, what's interesting this week is more what the Fed was not talking about than what the Fed was talking about, because they were, in terms of what they were talking about, basically repeating Chair Powell's, if this inflation stops, then we will hike more, which frankly is no revolutionary truth for a central banker. And this thing about deciding meeting by meeting, which is a little inconsistent with giving forward guidance, but you get a lot of license as a central banker, I suppose. No, what was interesting is no comment about financial conditions.
Right.
And also very interesting, the Fed has its own financial condition indices. It publishes the monthly version of those. And this week it just published the October print, which of course, showed a tightening of financial conditions. But in a month, they will publish the November print and we'll see that. So right now their indices are showing financial conditions as headwinds. And I bet you that next month it will turn into tailwinds. And that's the thing with financial conditions. It's very tricky to as a central banker to use them in your forward guidance because of
Right.
this feedback loop. So I think that's one that's gone.
The feedback loop of it.
Yeah, so the comments, I think the doves basically made a tactical mistake in talking about tightening of financial conditions. But so we're not going to hear about it again for quite some time. Another interesting factoid this week is a letter, actually, two letters, one from Senator Rick Scott, a Republican who is very critical of QE. And three from Governors Cook, Jefferson, and Kugler, replying to his questions about, when will you, will you bring back the balance sheet to a much lower level? And basically, concerns about the impact of the using the balance sheet, which, in my view, as an economist, I kind of agree with. And the reply, of course, was a little bit, up in the air, mañana por la mañana. We will do more QT, but we can't really tell you when we will end. So that's this week. And then this coming week, it's Thanksgiving. So even
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
even
All of
FOMC
our
members will be.
American friends, exactly.
Yeah, even the FOMC members will be eating their turkey and pie because they are not talking. So we're just getting the minutes, and the minutes are again, going to be the proverbially 200 economists if growth is stronger or this inflation stop. There may
Right.
be need to hike more. The Fed's resolution to slay inflation is as strong as it has ever been, and so on and so forth. So not much going on next week. In terms of data, so again, next week is a bit light because of Thanksgiving. We get the durable goods. The consensus shows a contraction in real terms of capital goods order, which makes sense because if you look in the GDP data, most of the growth in CapEx, which you know has been quite respectable in Q3, has come from building factories and foundries, right, thanks to our wonderful and badly titled Inflation Reduction Act. So the government is setting us up for some excess supply.
To be fair, inflation has come down slightly since they passed the bill.
Indeed.
Maybe it was more timing then.
Indeed, but if there is an illustration of correlation is not causation, I'd argue
exactly.
The IRA. So, you know, if you look at CapEx, it's basically software and capacity. So it makes sense for the little contraction in capital goods order in real terms. Then we get existing home sales, which of course are going to go down because of the mortgage lock-in effect. And then we have the S&P PMIs moving sideways. In terms of, you know, what happens this week and looking ahead, I think the resolution of the funding of the government, I think, was a turning point in the sense that we had a new House Speaker, untested. He was quite junior before. You know that in U.S. Congress, how you progress in the committees depends on your seniority, on how long you've been elected. So he was, no one really knew anything about him. No one knew if he would, you know, follow the prescription of his more extreme constituent and just make crazy demands. And actually, he tried to discharge his duty in a way that was both reflective of his constituents' demand and of the broader interests of the Republican Party, which is to avoid a shutdown because, because historically it's been bad for them. So he came up with this concept of laddered CR. So a CR, continuing resolution, is a bill that extends government funding on current level. And he broke down agencies in 20% 80%, 20% have a mid-January funding deadline, 80% have early February funding deadline. Honestly, it's unnecessary complexity, but I think he was just trying to reflect the view of his constituent. So interestingly, that CR was voted in the House with more Democratic than Republican votes, and not surprisingly, because there were no spending cuts. At the same time, no funding for Ukraine or for Israel, and no border measures. So the Senate voted it again. President Biden is going to sign it. And basically, what it means is that the window of opportunity for more fiscal brinkmanship has closed, because the next funded deadline is in January or February. By that time, we will be full gear in election season. And given Speaker Johnson's obvious focus on his broader party electoral prospect, he's not going to shut down the government in the middle of electoral season.
Can they still implement cuts? Like, is it possible that they're saying, let's agree to this, but now let's also work on proposing bills that do reduce spending for these specific parts of the government?
100%. And they are voting a budget, and they are going to vote a budget with deep cuts in the House, I mean.
Yeah.
But they will have to reach compromise with the Senate. And given that the Senate is controlled by the Democrats, and so is the White House, it's going to be very tough for House Republicans to get significant expenditure cuts without threatening some form of brinkmanship. And I really do think that brinkmanship in electoral season, if you are a rational actor and if you are, your objective function is about the Republican Party chances of winning the White House and Congress next year, you don't shut down the government. So basically, right. It's too late to really do much shape. So I mean that's I think that's where things stand going into the Thanksgiving week.
Okay, awesome. And as we like to do, certainly for our professional clients, I've just highlight a few pieces. So Bilal, kind of a continuation of the discussion we had around a lot of clients, especially in equity credit clients, asking questions about the stability of growth in the US. He put together 10 important charts heading into year end in his macroscope. I'll just highlight a few possible ones. Varesh executed a bullish oil view, going long February 2024 Brent contract, which I will say, I think that trades up like 2 or 3%. So that was great timing, Varesh, and you were very patient in putting that together. Mustafa put a few pieces out, good steepener trade for possible scenarios. That was a good piece. So several new trades in a modern portfolio. Mirza and Liang had a really nice piece breaking down the kind of President Xi and President Biden's meeting in the US and what we think it means. You, of course, had a great piece on no recession, no Fed cuts in 2024. So a lot of super interesting things, articles this past week. So if people haven't gotten a chance to read them, I would highly recommend hitting the website over the weekend, and wish everybody good luck. And I guess we'll see if we're going to do it on Friday or not. But either way, I want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving and all of our U.S. colleagues. And obviously, me as a dual citizen, I will wish my family a happy Thanksgiving as well.
Thank you, Andrew. Likewise.
Cool. Thank you.